Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, episode 236. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host Guy. I'm not sure, Guy, why I'm so sprightly and energetic today, because this weekend I've got this bad boy.
Wow.
Let me just see if this picks up on the mic.
It does indeed pick up on the mic.
That's my... many of you asking, what's that, Rick? If you're not watching, that is my medal, second medal for completing the London Marathon.
Well done. It's very heavy. I had a little feel of it before.
I bet you did. Yeah, it is heavy. This was the hardest ever. For the first time ever, I genuinely nearly quit.
Really? At what point?
Before halfway.
Really?
I made a few mistakes, Guy.
Went too fast?
My first mistake, I didn't train hard enough.
Didn't train, full stop. Brackets hard enough.
I did a couple of half marathons in the build-up. I thought that was enough training, but I've realised that's not enough training. And I had probably 3 weeks before the marathon where I fell off the tracks a little bit. I had a lot going on. Stag do's, master's trips, lots of eating, lots of drinking, lots of not training. And I pulled up on that start line on Sunday, really, at that point, kind of thinking to myself, I don't think I'm going to get through this. And I went out like an absolute train.
Do you know what pace you went out at?
Well, so last year I did it in 5 hours, 27 minutes. And my goal this year was to try and beat 5 hours. My goal actually was to try and knock an hour off my time with no justification, no...
With training, that would be a realistic objective.
Exactly. No validation of why I should just knock miraculously knock an hour off my time, bar the fact I was just going to run a bit faster. And I've been through the process last year, and I felt like last year I almost went too slow and I could have pushed myself harder. So when I started this run this time, the London Marathon, I set off and I was kind of just pottering along, felt like I was going a little bit faster. Noticed my pace was a minute faster per kilometre than last year. I was like, yeah, this is good. I'm happy with this. So bumped into Ramesh.
Ranganathan.
Yeah, well done. So that was quite cool. Got a selfie with him while I'm running.
Did you watch the videos or did you just...
I watched him.
Right, fair dues.
I was a fan of him. And then as that was, I was kind of imbibing it, I was enjoying it, thinking, I can do this. This is actually, I remember how I managed to accomplish this last year with no training. And behind me, I could hear like this kind of like crowd of more like, loud crowd of runners, thinking, who are these guys behind me? Why are they being so loud? And as they're kind of catching up with me, I'm thinking, I can't wait to join this party. It sounds like it's going to be epic. This group of people behind me. And as they got closer, I realized it's the pace setter for 4:30.
Right.
And around a pace setter, this particular pace setter had a lot of energy and he was really motivating his kind of crew that had circulated around him. So I'm like, I'm joining this crew. This is my goal, 4:30. I'm going to join this crew. So I'm jogging along and I'm thinking, this is a pace I can continue with, no problem at all. And I started thinking, what happens if I need a wee? What happens? I mean, I don't think you'd complete a marathon.
No, I don't think I would.
For the amount of wees that you
have. Yeah, but fit enough. I'm more, I could do two fit enough wise, but I just can't, just the wees.
The queuing up for the toilets is a nightmare. And I was thinking, like, how are we going to stop? So I was desperate for the toilet, so I had to duck out, nip to the toilet. By the time I come back, the 4 hour 30 marker was way into the distance, and I was thinking, well, if I just keep them in sight, I can do this, but I needed like 3 or 4 wees through the marathon anyway.
So that's all it was.
I got to halfway in 2 hours 15.
All right, so you're on track.
So I was well
absolutely on track.
Just loving it. It is, without question, the greatest atmosphere ever. The difference this time, and I've never experienced this in running, and I mean this ever, I've never experienced where your legs just go.
Mm.
And they actually, like, you feel like you're pulling muscles. Right. Have you ever experienced that?
I've never ran long enough, I don't think, to justify that, so no.
Like, things normally ache, or you can feel little twinges, but for the first time ever, there was a point, probably just after half, where I literally felt like round my knee, I was like, something's going to give. Ooh. On both knees. Like, something is going to give. I felt like I had to protect my knees and run a different way. And then, so I stopped a couple of times and almost rubbed myself down my knees,
yeah.
Rubbed my leg and my knees down to kind of, and it worked a lot. It really helped. But the back 13 miles of the marathon were a real slog. So I beat last year's time.
Yep.
Only just. I did it in 5 hours 20. So I was a bit disappointed I didn't break 5 hours, but again, no justification of why I should have done. But at one point, I genuinely thought, I'm not going to complete this marathon. And the fact I did, I was over.
To complete a marathon is very impressive. I'd like to know what you could actually do with training, though.
I'd love to do it. I'd love to know. I can't believe... One thing I know I will never, ever, ever, ever in a million years be able to do is break 4 hours. I don't think... I can't break 4 hours in a marathon. I just think that's too fast for that longer time. For the people who get into 3 hours... Honestly, and the people who break 3 hours, I mean, it's borderline sprinting.
I think what's mad though is I can't even imagine completing a marathon, so I'm not. But what I suppose is, whereas you can't comprehend breaking 4 hours, and people listening and watching now who can't even comprehend running a marathon, so it's almost like, it's a bit like golf in a weird way, that when you can break 80 and you can shoot in the 70s, you probably can't imagine someone that can go and shoot 65 semi-regular, like a tour player. But then someone that's struggling to break 100 can't imagine someone that can break it. It's true. Just kind of what you get used true. To, isn't it? So it's like a low 4 hours and breaking 4 hours is an insane accomplishment. So I think it's almost like the gold standard, isn't it? Like breaking 4 hours. It's like that's seen as like, wow. I'd say in golf terms, that's breaking 75.
Yeah.
But I think if you trick, because you can do a good 10K time.
I can. I've got a 10K again. I'm doing the Manchester 10K.
Nice.
In May. 26th of May, which I'm really looking forward to because I feel like I might actually try and really sprint that. Like, I genuinely think running 10K straight after a marathon, I feel like, obviously, it's a quarter of the time. I genuinely think my goal is to try and break 45 minutes.
Wow, that'd be a good effort.
But yeah, it was amazing. The support from the general public anyway, because I have my name on my shirt, and when you're running along, you hear lovely chants and lovely comments from just general spectators who want to wish you well. And as I mentioned last year on the podcast, and what was the phrase we used last year at the marathon?
Underlay,
that was it. We didn't do that this year, but the amount of people that watched the videos and are fans of the channel and knew I was doing the marathon and tracked me on the app and they sent me messages of good luck. And as I ran past those, and it's a different like crowd. Like you get the normal, like, obviously spectators going, go on, Rick, you're doing really well. And as soon as I found it, it's like, go on, Ricky Shields! Go on, lad! Go on, Ricky Shields! It's like, suddenly, it's like all about Ricky Shields. And it genuinely spurs you on. There's so many times I really wanted to either stop running or walking or take a rest. And I quite literally couldn't do because it wasn't like ridiculous amounts, but every few hundred yards, there would be a fan that would kind of... And I didn't want to walk in front of a fan because that would have been like I was quitting. But amazing, amazing. Thank you to everyone who has donated. Kerry, who I started the run with, he actually ran with a cape. And on the back of the cape was 200 names of children who have been affected or unfortunately died from cancer, who have got cancer or died from cancer. So I was running for his charity. It's called It's Never You. It's a wonderful charity that helps support parents with children who have cancer. We've getting close to raising £4,000, which is amazing. if you listen to this podcast, if you enjoy the videos, do me a favor, listen to this little clip from Kerry. And if you can donate, there's going to be a link in the description. If we can get that donation higher than what it is currently, it'll be really appreciated. Listen to why I ran the London Marathon, hear from Kerry. So I think it'll mean a lot to a lot of people.
It's always someone else. It's never you. Those were the first words my wife spoke to me when our son Hugh was told that he had cancer in 2020. In every corner of the UK, families are facing a battle that no one should ever have to fight: childhood cancer. Around 2,000 children a year are diagnosed with cancer in the UK, and for those parents, every day is a test of strength and resilience. Behind the scenes of those smiles are stories of pain, courage, and sacrifice. It's a journey that's hard to comprehend unless you've walked it yourself. That's why we, at It's Never You, stand beside parents who face the unthinkable, offering a hand to hold, a shoulder to lean on, and a platform that understands the unique challenges of childhood cancer. We built the UK's only exclusive platform for parents of children with cancer, the Children's Cancer Platform. A lifeline for parents navigating the complexities of their child's illness. It's a place of shared experiences, expert advice, and a community that truly understands. But we're not stopping there. It's Never You is not just a support system, it's a voice for change. We're standing up and speaking out, advocating for better financial help for families dealing with childhood cancer. We're knocking on the doors of policymakers, urging them to see the change that's needed. Together, we can make a difference in the lives of these families, ensuring that no parent has to face a financial burden alone. With the help of our MP, Sir Oliver Heald, we introduced a bill, Hugh's Law, which will financially help parents who have been forced to leave work and normality to look after a sick child. It's Never You started from our deepest pain, the loss of a beloved six-year-old son Hugh to cancer. Today, we channel that pain into purpose, ensuring that no other parent has to endure what we went through. But we can't do it alone. We need your support to amplify our voice, to extend our reach, and to be the strength that these families desperately need. Join us in this fight. Help us rewrite the narrative for these families, because together, it's never just you, it's all of us, standing shoulder to shoulder, making a difference.
And I love you. And
so yeah, if you can donate, it'd be really appreciated. Link in the top line of the description. I've also said to Kerry, I am going to commit to doing it 8 more years in a row.
Wow.
I want to do the marathon 10 years in a row. I saw a record recently. I think someone's done 44 marathons in London marathons in a row.
Flipping.
And there's only 6 people in the world to do that.
That's ridiculous.
So whether I get that far. But anyway, amazing, amazing, mate. Would you ever do one?
Yes, I'd like to say I've done it, but I also would really want to train for it. And I don't know if I want, it's that I would want to commit to. Do you know what I mean?
The training is really, not that I know, but imagine, like, trying to squeeze in that much training.
Yeah.
It's a real commitment.
And also, I've never been a massive runner, but I've been a casual doing a few 5Ks a week. And I think I said to you, I've stopped recently. I've been doing on my stationary bike instead. And my body feels so much better for it. I didn't realise when running, and it's probably because I have bad technique and don't stretch enough. Well, it is those two factors, I'm sure. But I'm very achy. Whereas when I don't run and I just go on my bike, I feel so much better. So I don't know, but maybe. I'd love to have the medal.
I'm amazed.
Can I have your medal instead?
I'm actually going to put it on the shelf.
Nice.
I'm amazed how good my legs feel today and yesterday. Like, my legs last year felt a bit painful, but not too bad. Today, they feel good. Like, they feel normal. Just my feet. I've got a couple of pretty bad sores on my feet, which I didn't have last year. So that was, that's what's taken out of me this week.
A remedy for sore feet.
Don't run marathons.
No, wear Echo footwear.
That is very true. If Echo did running marathon shoes, I'd be laughing.
Echo footwear is the gold standard, I think we can all agree on. You are obviously proudly sponsored by Echo, and you wear Echo on course and off course.
Not when I'm doing my marathons,
though. Not doing your marathon. However, if it was a walk across Scotland, you did indeed wear your Echoes. But people may have seen those kind of hardcore fans making the video released on Monday, yesterday, where you announced you have got your very own Echo collaboration shoe. Now let's just picture this. You've got people like Tiger Woods who've had obviously TW Nike footwear before, and obviously there's many players, tall players, who've had Echo footwear before. Can you imagine a young Ricky Shields on the little par three course, kind of shanking it around and hitting some lob shots?
What was this, last week?
Yeah. Imagine that one day he would have his own collaboration shoe with a major brand like Echo.
It's very, very, very cool. I remember when the idea got floated about. It feels like a long time ago
now. It was a long time ago.
It's amazing how much effort goes into these shoes. And to do a collaboration line, a lot of effort in. We went over to Denmark, to Echo HQ. We got to meet all the team. And we really sat down about what do we want in a shoe? What do I want in a shoe? Naturally, I wanted my favourite colours, the colours of my channel, which is obviously red.
You wanted wheels at the start, didn't you?
I wanted rocket boosters along the back.
Could you have lights when I walk, Rick? 38, mate. Come on, chill out.
37. But nearly 38. Obviously, for me, the Biome C4 is the best golf shoe. It's the best shoe. Like, it is so unbelievably comfy. So the choice of shoe was an easy one for me. And then really wanting to incorporate a lot of the things that I liked, and also just have my own touch on it. Obviously, I love the colours red, black, white, mainly because of they are my favourite colours, but also a little bit of Man United inspired in there as well. I know.
Boo.
Had a bad weekend. But yeah, it was the fact of having that really cool line, having my logo on the back, having it on the tongue. Inside the shoe, you've got these chevrons with Echo/RS. And even on the side where, again, you mentioned before, they've done collaboration lines, but only exclusively currently until Friday this week with Tour Pros. It actually says my name on the side of the shoe, which is unbelievable. These are limited edition golf shoes. There is limited amounts available when they first go on sale this Friday, 2 p.m. UK time. That's Friday, the 26th of April, 2 p.m. UK time. You can get them at echo.com. We'll put a link in the top line of the description. On the Clubhouse episode, we'll remind you again on the audio episode. By the way, support for the Clubhouse episodes have been amazing. Thank you, everyone that's been listening to those. But yeah, we'll remind you again on Friday. But yeah, collaboration line, Biome C4 Echo/Rick Shields golf shoes on sale this Friday. Get them while you can. They are limited amounts made so far.
Yes, well, obviously, this is a sports podcast sometimes. It's a football podcast. It's a running podcast, but it is primarily a golf podcast.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And this weekend was another huge week in the world of golf. Certainly there's three people it's been a huge week for, Rick.
Can I guess?
You can try.
Nelly Korda.
Correct.
Unbelievable. 5 wins in her last 5 starts.
Ridiculous.
Picked up her second major tournament.
Ridiculous. And jumped in the water. Cannonballed.
And quite literally looks undefeatable currently right now.
Yes. Who else? But we'll come on to that in a bit more depth. Who else have been a huge week for?
Scottie Scheffler.
Correct.
I mean, honestly.
Another jacket's the collection.
His golf game currently at the moment. And I think people, we'll come on to it a little bit more. I think people maybe mixed my understanding of Scottie Scheffler last week. Only a few weeks ago, I was saying, I love the fact he's dominating. Yeah. And I love the fact he's a dominant golfer. On sight of the Masters, I'm a little bit frustrated that he didn't drop some shots, but that was not me wanting him to drop shots. It was just on sight, you want a bit of drama on the back nine. The fact he won by 4 didn't offer that drama. The fact he won again on the weekend and he won by 3, but give him his credit, I think he listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
And instead of completely shooting the lights out, he actually threw a couple of water balls in there. You know, he made it a little bit harder for himself.
Bit of a rain delay on the Sunday. I like how he did that as well.
Yeah. That really helps because obviously you've still got the subline of Meredith, his wife, being in 8 months pregnant at the moment, so could drop any time.
He'll bloody learn when he's got a baby.
I mean, could it be a worse time ever? Or is it helping him play such great golf because he's thinking to himself, at any point I'm going to get a phone call. I've got to get out of here. And then I'm going to say the third person, maybe a curveball.
Yeah, go on.
And maybe because we've had him on the channel. Have we had him on the channel?
No.
All right. It's not the person I'm thinking of then.
No.
Third person.
The third person, do you want to know, is, he's been on someone's channel. I don't know if you'll know this or not, actually. He's been on Grant Horvath's. This is Miles Russell.
Oh, Miles.
So Miles Russell is the 15-year-old who is the youngest player ever to make the cut on the Corn Ferry Tour. He's a young left-handed guy. I said he's 15 years old. I think he's in 25th or something in the event in the end. But one absolute amazing story. And the reason I wanted to bring that one up is we had a question on the Facebook group. And it's from someone called Harrison Cole, I believe the surname is. Do you think Miles Russell, and he's put brackets, the 15-year-old who made the cut on the Corn Ferry Tour, will win a major? And if so, when? I want to address this because it is, first of all, I have no idea. How can you say? He's 15 years old and he's obviously incredibly, incredibly talented to play that level of golf. And I don't know if you saw, Rick, any of his interviews as well, how he came across. He looked like he behaved like he's 25 or even 35. He was so level-headed.
Now you've said that, I have watched that video with him on Grant's channel.
Yeah.
And you know what I loved about him as well is that he's not kind of into the social media world.
Yeah.
Doesn't really know YouTube golfers. I'm guessing he got set up by maybe TaylorMade to film with even Grant. He conducted himself so incredibly well. And the fact he's gone out there with so much pressure on himself and to go and shoot a final round 66 to get into the top 25. I mean, what?
Well,
I mean, it's unbelievable. What were you doing at 15?
I think I was going to be a tall player because I was off about 7. In honesty.
I don't even think I'm allowed to say on this podcast what I was doing at 15. Because I wasn't doing this.
At 15, I was, again, off about 7 handicap, the second best player in my club who deep down believed I would be on tour because I could occasionally break 80 at a very easy Parkland course.
I was probably the same. I was one of the better players at my club. Probably, I don't even know if I was off single figures, maybe off 9. Just about single figures, again, walking around like I was the next big thing. And you've got this kid who is 15. He's an amateur still, isn't he?
Yeah, hell yeah, yeah.
His handicap is something outrageous.
I don't even know.
He's the best junior amateur in the world. And he's just got into this Corn Ferry event with proper players. Like, Corn Ferry is no Mickey Mouse tour whatsoever. And he's gone out there and shot unbelievable scores to come in top 25 finish.
I think, what
is life?
This is the thing though, and this is why I wanted to mention this today about junior golf. And you could say the same in all sports, but why it's so hard to predict, because obviously if he's 15 years old making the cut on a Corn Ferry Tour, he is exceptional. And you would like to think that he is going to go on to have an amazing career in the world of golf. And I hope he does. I'd love to see him, you know, I'd love to kind of watch his career and see how he progresses. But what interests me and almost confuses me is when you look at, like, for example, I've got on Wikipedia here the US Junior Amateur Golf Championship, and you can see the winners and this runner-up from 2023 right down to 1948, and you look at some of the names that are on there and they are household names. So obviously Tiger Woods, famous, won it 3 times in a row before he then went on to actually win the US Amateur 3 times in a row. So Tiger Woods is on there as a winner. You've got names like Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler, Will Zalatoris, Minwoo Lee, won in 2016. You've got countless David Duval, countless names on there. And it sounds silly, if you go into Wikipedia and those names naturally have a blue click-through link to click on that person's name. You then look at some of the runners-up and even some of the winners from, again, 1948 right through to kind of modern day, and their Wikipedia name is just like red. There's nothing to click onto. Now, that is often because they aren't as well-known or they've not gone on to have a career in golf. They haven't got like a Wikipedia page. Now, I'm not for 1 second measuring the success of having a Wikipedia page or not, but what I mean is there's so many names on that list who are instantly recognisable and very famous golfers, and there's some of you just never heard of who have just not gone on to make a career in golf. Now, if you were good enough to either win the US Junior Amateur or be runner-up in that event, at that time, if someone said to you, right, I won't name anybody out in particular, but it's 2005, such a body wins, such a body comes second place, and you saw how good they were, you'd go, well, they're going to get on tour, they're going to win 5 majors, but obviously so few do. It's so, so hard. So I guess in a long-winded way, my point is it's just so early to say how his career will go on to pan. I'd love it to be amazing, and fingers crossed it will be, but just enjoy it, I guess, and take all that experience.
I'm even just looking. He was 14 under through 4 rounds.
It's crazy.
He shot a 68, a 66, a 70, and a 66.
It is crazy.
I mean, what the hell? I mean, one of the very talented junior golfers. We got to pleasure a film with a few years ago now, Frank Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And was he about 15 when I played with him?
I think he was.
And he was an incredible ball striker. Mm-hmm. He's now gone on to really good success. He's won big kind of amateur events like the Living Trophy, etc. He's now turned into a tour pro. He's on DP World Tour, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he's trying to make a name for himself. You've got guys like Miles Russell. They'll probably be 100 of these 15-year-olds. And it's just the ones who are maybe picking up headlines right now. But incredible.
Even on that, though, and this kind of brings me on to our next topic of Scotty Scheffler and people's success and prolonged success and why it's so difficult to measure. Because you might have seen this stat, and I hope you've not, because it might ruin it. There was something that went out yesterday on Twitter. I think it was the Golf Channel, CBS or whoever, that put it out. And it was... Have you seen it? The fewest events to get...
Oh, no.
So it was
I've seen that one as well. Sorry.
Pretend you've not. It was the... Matt, you've probably not seen it, Matt, so I'll tell it to you. It's the fewest starts to get from your first to your 10th win on the PGA Tour since 1983, okay? So the Jordan Spieth, that was 97 events, okay?
Which is 1 in 10.
Correct. Just beaten by him was his close friend, Justin Thomas, that was 94 events from his first win to his 10th win. Rory was 79, Tiger Woods was 59, and David Duval was 33.
I mean, that's astronomical.
It's absolutely insane.
30% of his events he won.
And I remember growing up in that era when he did have Tiger and Duval. I don't remember it super vividly, but I do remember it because even to the extent, I remember the Nike golf ball, they did the Tour Accuracy, the Tour Accuracy TW, and then the Tour Accuracy DD, which is obviously the David Duval ball. And you look at his career around that kind of early, it was like kind of late 90s, 97 through to like 2001 when he won the Open. He was obviously dominant and up against Tiger Woods, and it was albeit a young Tiger Woods, but he was so, so good. And obviously since then didn't go on to do loads. But it just kind of shows that even with somebody at that level of dominance whose stats are insane, it's not a guarantee. If you were in someone says you... If someone might just... were you sick of me talking then, Matt? Unplug me. If someone said to you in 2001 that Duval won't go on to win again on the PGA Tour, you'd think they were absolutely just talking nonsense, and he didn't do. So again, back to that point of a young Miles Russell, you just don't know, but he's doing everything right to get himself in that spot to go on and be successful. I wish him all the best.
And full credit to his parents, because they must be really guiding him in the right way, not only for his golf, but also his demeanour, his interviews that he's doing, the fact that he's not completely consumed in social media. He seems like he's very switched on and mature, so you know, I can't wait to see how he gets on.
I want you to answer something for me now then, back to Scotty Scheffler. I am fully on Team Scheffler now, and I'll be honest, it's the beard. It really... I'm looking down into Wikipedia page, there's a picture of him from 2023 with no beard versus now. He's a bit like that when you see that meme of like what was it like, I've lost it,
like the guy... Your girlfriend's...
Told you not to worry about... Yeah. Something like one of those memes, yeah. But basically, he's had this transformation. But obviously, I genuinely think he's fun to watch. I love watching him chip in. I love the fact that when he's putting, although it's been better, you still don't quite know. I love his kind of erratic movement with his feet.
I think there's no question marks around any of his game.
No?
I picked up on this point a few minutes ago about this idea that people might have... Because I saw a few comments last...
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Night when he won, oh Rick, you're not going to be happy about this. I bloody love the fact he's won. Like, this is unbelievable. We have not seen this. Is
Matt's got one of those memes up of that guy when he's like walking and there's like his girlfriend's next to him. He's looking at the woman.
Yeah. We'll have to put that on the video podcast. You have to mock that up with Scottish.
Yeah, I'll add that one in.
It's like, I feel like there's so much. This is once in a potential generation. Like, to win 5 of his last starts, including that Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Players, the Masters, the recent event at Harbour Town.
The RBC Heritage.
I mean, what the hell? He's cruising to these victories as well. I think he's had two rounds of golf. His worst rounds of golf have been level par, and he's had 2 of them. Every other round of golf has been under par. What the actual hell? He started this week fairly innocuous. I think he had a little practice round on the Tuesday. I think he had a little 9-hole practice round on the Wednesday. He then goes out and shoots a mediocre 2 under par for his first round of golf, and then moves it into fourth and then fifth gear.
What would, there'll obviously never be another Tiger Woods, I don't believe. Well, never say never, but it'd be very hard for there to be someone that can change the game like Tiger Woods did. And you think about why Tiger Woods was so dominant and so, so influential. There were so many factors. He was young. He was obviously an absolute child prodigy that had been on TV at the age of, 2 or 18 months, and people had kept an eye on him all that time, and he'd gone on to, again, win that US Junior Am 3 times in a row, win the US Am 3 times in a row, win the Masters at, 21 in 1997. The fact he was mixed race, that you don't see obviously as much in golf, it's very much known as a white sport, and obviously in America there was the troubles that Tiger Woods had and the racism that he got and how he kind of came through that. And then the Nike branding, the Nike's obviously a cool brand. The whole thing, the whole package of Tiger Woods just was a boom in golf and got so many people into the game, including myself and obviously you, and that kind of inspiration. Would somebody like Scottie Scheffler be able to do that? You know, if he keeps dominating and keeps winning and becomes even more of a household name for non-golfers, does he move the needle?
Not sure. You are almost more comparing to, and I'm not a massive American football fan, but almost more like a Tom Brady.
Mm.
Like, he could be incredibly dominant like Tom Brady was. Has Tom Brady got more people into American football? Potentially. Is he a household name against people who don't play American football? Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if he's going to have that much impact to really drag the game of golf up to the heights that Tiger did in obviously the early 2000s. But he is going to become a outrageously dominant name. I can't see this stopping. I think the baby's gonna have a slight effect
positive effect, couldn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. You know, the mad stat that I saw, which I thought you were going to bring up before, have you heard about this world ranking stat?
No.
Okay, this is a mad one.
Go on, hit me with it.
I don't particularly know how the world ranking
works. No, I don't think anybody does.
Okay, however, right, listen to this. Between him and Rory McIlroy, mm-hmm. okay, the points gap is bigger there compared to the points gap between Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods, who is 700th odd in the world.
Wow.
The points gap. He's got over double the amount of points, world ranking points, than Rory McIlroy. He is going to be world number one for a long, long, long time. Now, to put him in Tiger's world and category, for him to catch up with Tiger's record at world number one, he has to be world number one till 2035, Scottie Scheffler. So he has to do it for another 11 years to become as dominating in world number one category as Tiger is. Is he going to do? I don't know. Who knows? Miles Russell might knock him off his perch.
Again, there's another question. Another question for you then. How do you personally, and also how do you think the public, so there's two questions there because you and the public might not align, but how do you measure a successful golfer? Because typically it's done on major championships, isn't it? And if we are measuring off major championships, that then closes the discussion of Jack Nicklaus versus Tiger Woods, doesn't it? Because Jack Nicklaus won 18, Tiger's won 15. So case closed, you could argue. If you're looking at, you know, Rory versus Brooks Koepka, well, it's 4 versus 5 if you're just going off major championships. If we are going off majors alone, obviously this period that Scottie Scheffler's had, this dominance, and by such a huge amount, like you said, in the world ranking points, I don't think I've seen that in the time that I've been playing golf, apart from obviously the Tiger era. I don't want to say he's only got two majors because that's incredible still. But he's got two majors right now and he might win another three this year. Who knows? He might win none. Does he have to get more of those major championships in the bag, in the trophy case, so to speak, to cabinet, to actually have that kind of legacy, yeah, almost?
He does. He's in his infancy, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But he's young. Yeah. Is he 27?
26, 27, yeah.
Like, he's young. Like, if he plays another 10 years, gets to 37, he'd have played in 40 major tournaments. In the rate he's going at the moment, he might win 10. But he might win 15.
Do you think that people need to look outside of majors more to measure success? Or is it all about the majors? It is about the majors. Yeah, so would you say then, because I wouldn't say that Brooks had a better career than Rory.
I on stats, I would say he has.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I wouldn't. That's... Yeah. Okay. Well,
so I think now, if you look at stats, he has had. Is he had more major tournaments now?
So Brooks has got 5, and Rory's got 4. But if you take those 5 away from Brooks, he's got 4 other PGA Tour wins. So out of his 9, 5 of those are majors. Whereas Rory has obviously got the 4 majors, but has won. Again, just go PGA Tour. Let me find it. So Rory's won 24 PGA Tour. Take away his 4. He's won 20.
You know what's mad? I'm just looking here. Scottie Scheffler, last year was tied second at the PGA Championship and the year before was tied second at the US Open. He's going to win more majors this year.
But is that, again, if he only wins... Say if he wins another 4 times this year, Scotty, but then no more majors this year... He's still only on 2. I find it hard to just go purely off majors, though.
The challenge with it, let's say, okay, I'm going to flip this around. The start he's had so far, okay, so what's he had? He had 5 wins, including the major tournament. Is that right? Okay.
No, he's had 9 wins, 5 of them.
This year?
Oh, who? Sorry, I was thinking about Brooks Koepka.
Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
5 wins.
He's had 4 wins, is it not? 4 out of 5. I don't know.
He's had 4 wins out of 5 starts this year.
With a major.
With a major in there as well. Let me just check those stats. Give me a second. 2004. Yeah. 1, 2. Yeah. So he's won Arnold Palmer Invitational. Yeah. Okay. So he's won 4 times this year, including the major tournament. Okay. But the events he's won, I mean, not that you can ever classify this, but the Players' Championship class as the 5th major, Arnold Palmer Invitational, huge event, RBC Heritage, huge event, okay? Let's say this year, let me have a think, Joachim Niemann, mm-hmm, okay? If he's in, I'm sure he is, wins the Open and the PGA Championship, mm-hmm, but wins nothing else for the rest of the year. Who's had a better year?
In that year, I would say Joachim Niemann.
Because he's won 2 majors over these.
But in a career, whose career would you rather have right now? And this is no offence to the people named Ian Poulter or Rich Beam.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's a good one. Because Rich Beam's won a major.
Yeah. Or Ben Curtis or Todd Hamilton or...
It's hard, isn't it?
So I think you're right. I think in a year, you'd rather have two majors than five normal events, for example. But over a career, I don't know. I just feel like it is the go-to thing to measure success on, and it can, you have to have something to be quantifiable. But I think that it's hard. Or you could argue Lee Westwood or Colin Montgomery, all those guys, would they swap their career for one major and limited other success? I don't think they would.
Didn't we even ask Lee Westwood that?
I think we, yeah. It was a long time ago now.
It's a bit mad. Time will tell with Scottie Scheffler. And if he goes on this year and absolutely dominates, and he dominates the major tournaments, and he wins more PGA Tour events, I don't think there's going to be a question mark. The question mark around, like, say, a Rory or a Brooks, that's somewhat subjective, you're right. But the facts would say that Brooks has had a better career because he's won five major tournaments.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard, isn't it? It is hard.
Do you measure it? You can't measure it on money.
You could.
But that doesn't go into the past at all. That's only subjective to now. Because again, you can't measure the money because you only have to be able to measure the money each year. Because
you don't have career earnings, though.
Yeah, but when Rory started on tour, the career purses were smaller, mm-hmm. albeit it was still amazing, smaller than when Brooks started.
True.
And Rory's had a longer career, so he would have acquired more earnings anyway. I don't know actually what you'd base it on if it's not majors. And that goes against the point. I still think Tiger Woods is the best golfer that's ever walked the planet.
But then you can you? That's the thing, isn't
it? That's where it's like, really difficult.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
It's a bit like in football, we will measure like Harry Kane is an incredible striker, but never won a trophy, as far as I know, obviously.
When we was at the Masters over dinner one night, we had this conversation around the Mount Rushmore, okay, mm-hmm. of professional sports people.
Yeah.
Who would be on it?
Is it four people?
I believe so. That's what we were doing off anyway. Let me just double check. It's four people.
Okay, off the top of my head, so don't hate me. Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
And you keep them as different sports,
right? You don't have
than,
to.
So Lionel.
But it'd be hard. I think it's hard to get two Mount Rushmore characters in the same sport. But you could do.
You could have gone like Pele or Maradona. But no, so I'll go with them. I've got one more. Ooh. Someone like Federer or Djokovic, potentially.
Yeah.
Or LeBron James. I don't know. It's hard. I'm not really into American sports. You might go thingy. What you said, what's he called?
Tom Brady.
Go on, what was yours?
You ready? Yeah. Okay. Mine's quite an eclectic mix.
Go on.
Okay. Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. I think everyone agree with that one. Okay. Yeah. You like this one? Serena Williams.
Yeah.
Like, dominated the sport without question.
Yeah, good shout.
This one is more of a question mark.
Go on.
I actually went Ronaldo over Messi.
No way.
Because I don't believe that you can justify the success of a professional footballer via a World Cup. Because Portugal is a smaller country than Argentina. They've got less chance of winning the World Cup.
Potentially. But I don't think... I think...
My last one... Real, real, real curveball. I don't even know what I can say out loud. I got laughed off the... I've got two people.
Go on.
Usain Bolt.
It's not...
And my other wild one after a few years alias and beers was Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Not as bad as... They're not that bad in terms of what...
You could make an argument for all of them.
The difference is here is because obviously snooker is nowhere near as big as a global sport as football or American football or basketball. And you could say the same about sprinting. It's like, it's not as talked about day to day, is it? But in terms of what they've done in their sport,
I think I was basing myself as well on influence of that sport.
Mm.
Like, I believe those people have influenced their sports more than anyone else, really.
It's hard, isn't it? And I think as well, you naturally, you do get strung up in whatever era you are in yourself.
People listen to this podcast who are
like, people love Seve, and obviously rightly so, but we weren't really around. We were only to the end. And then, you know, if you were a fan of a Jack Nicklaus or a Tom Watson or an Arnold Palmer,
Like now we say Messi or Ronaldo. Back in the day, it would have been Maradona, Pele,
yeah.
Georgie Best.
You're right. I think those two, though, I think have started to transcend, for the older people have gone, like, look at what they've done. But you're right, it does take a long, long time. And it's even like Scotty Scheffler now. If he does get to seven majors next year or a couple of years or whatever it might be, I would still be going, oh, he couldn't lace Tiger's boots. Because you just have that thing, don't you, about that was my time. Yeah, fair, it's good.
Do you think many people from Jack's era have accepted that Tiger is maybe more better?
The problem is, although I'm a huge Tiger fan, I think we are being quite contradictory, which you kind of touched on before, because one breath we're saying it's about majors.
I know.
I don't know. I think what Tiger did and when we went back to before was how different he was. I think there's so much about him was just different. And, you know, the way he celebrated and the Sunday red and I don't know, there's so much about it, I think.
Well, his clothing line.
Yeah, his clothing line. That's so much more than just the actual golf. But if you are going off majors one, you've got no argument that Jack Nicklaus, and also the amount of seconds that Jack Nicklaus had as well.
Crazy.
And the guy,
amounts.
You know, he had very, very fierce opposition and competitors. It wasn't like he was just playing against nobody's. Not that Tiger was, but you know what I mean? He had a great competition. So I don't know, as much as I think that's us being stuck in our era, this Tiger era, you can't go against the facts that Jack Nicklaus has won more majors.
Another question then. Do you think Tiger Woods has underachieved?
No, I don't at all. I think he's been ridiculous. But what I did look at the other day in terms of underachievement is I was typing Tiger Woods then, and Tiger Woods lookalike came up because I was looking at that for a potential video one time, but it didn't work. So if you look on Tiger's actual Wikipedia, what I looked at the other day, I kind of forgot about was...
This podcast was brought to you by Wikipedia.
If you look, actually, from... Obviously, Tiger won the Masters in 2019. His last major win before that was 2008, right? So 11 years. And if you're looking between that, 09, he had a great year in the majors. 10 was good. 11, he came a tied fourth, then a cut and didn't play another two. That big spell from 2010 to 2018, there is some top tens and some seconds, etc., but... there's no wins at all. So it's like he's almost had, pretty much apart from the 2019 Masters, a decade of no major wins. That's like 40 events with no wins. Obviously, he was injured and didn't play in quite a few of them, etc. But could he have got another couple in there? I don't know.
Do you think he would have stayed healthy?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like.
Oh, yeah. But is that underachievement, though? Is that underachievement feels like you've not fulfilled your potential because of effort or work ethic? Whereas injury, I mean, even if it's preventable, is that a different thing? If someone said to you in 2008 that Tiger would only go on to win one more major to get to 15, you'd have thought they were insane.
Yeah, you would.
And that's all he's done. But at the same time, when he won in 1997, some people would have been like, oh my days, this guy's going to win a million. Other people would be, oh, it's a one-off luck. So to then say he's going to win another 14 of those to get to 15... I don't know. I think what annoys me a little bit is that although I was 9 years old when Tiger won his Tiger Slam, I don't really remember it at all. And I can't imagine what that would be like now, even though I was alive. But to actually witness it and understand it, somebody having all four major championships on the table at once.
It's absolutely crazy, isn't it?
Imagine like if Scottie Scheffler did it now, it'd actually be a proper like year Grand Slam. But just to do a hold all four at once, the dominance of that. It's insane.
It's absolutely ridiculously crazy.
But do you think what's bigger for golf? Having one person like Scottie Scheffler who is just so dominant, or would it be better if he wasn't quite as good and you had him and you had Rory and you had Ludwig and you had a couple of others who were like more neck and neck and having that kind of four or five guys battling out each week and you almost pick a favourite? I don't know, I think one our cake and eat it, don't we? I want one person to be dominant. I end up tuning into the golf on Sunday. Didn't watch the Monday morning bit, but Sunday to watch him, because I'm like, I need to watch this guy, and a bit with Nelly Korda as well. I didn't watch as much, but kind of kept my eye on it. It's like, we're seeing dominance.
Well, obviously, the other huge story, and we mentioned at the start of the show, the three golfers who have been incredible weeks. Nelly Korda's run has been astronomical. Like, to win her last five events, including the major tournament, she's winning them in style as well. She looks so comfortable. She mentioned in her post-round interview that the back nine on Sunday was the longest back nine she's ever experienced, because I think there was a few little hiccups in there as well. But, I mean, what a run. How weird is it that both these two golfers are having such an incredible run at exactly the same time?
I can't work out if it's amazing or I'd almost rather them be separate a little bit to have two stories to follow at separate times. But
no, because I quite like this idea, going back to your point a minute ago about this idea of, do you want two or three of them at the top of the, like, fighting and seeing who can compete with each other? As much as obviously Scotty and Nelly are on totally different tours, like, we see now, well, who's gonna not win first? Like, you know, it creates a bit of a storyline.
The only bad thing, and I'll hold my hands up to this, I'm not afraid to say so, is that on Sunday on Sky they had the women's golf and they had the men's golf on at the same time, and I did tune into the men's to watch Scotty. And I'll be honest, if Scotty wasn't in contention and it was somebody else, I would have watched the women's instead to watch Nelly. But I kind of felt like in that situation, I want to watch Scotty. Whereas,
I think it helped when the rain delay kicked in.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot more people tuned into the ladies' tour because of that rain delay.
Exactly. But I think when they're kind of fighting, I do want to watch Scotty just dominate, to be honest with you. But I'm also definitely going to be keeping an eye on the women's stuff and watching Nelly Korda, because I think, again, having that person that can excite people and get people talking and get more eyeballs and golf. And I think as well, getting more, I know quite a lot of men do watch women's golf, but I don't watch it enough because there's just so much to watch. But if there's a real incentive to watch now and somebody who's, you're witnessing greatness, I'll definitely tune in more.
I mean, it is great to see. And then the other subplot, TaylorMade must be licking the lips right now.
Mm.
They've got the two best players in the world, both signed by TaylorMade, number one players in the world, playing the greatest golf, winning 9 of their last 10 starts between them, including 2 major tournaments. I mean, that's some scoop, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's how TaylorMade then go about and tell that story, isn't it? I mean, I'm just going on their website now, they've got a massive banner about Nelly Korda, rightly so. How do they get that message to people to make them want to go and try? Because when somebody gets so dominant like Tiger in the day, it almost becomes irrelevant what golf clubs they're using. You just almost see them as subhuman, just having this insane set of skills that you could almost use any golf clubs. You could use secondhand clubs and still go and win. So I think TaylorMade have to still push that messaging across. But
I think the fact of them. I think the fact of, like, Scotty's struggled with his putting so much and then bang, he sticks in the spider and goes on this incredible run. That's a huge story for those guys.
Do you reckon the gutted doesn't use the ball, or do you reckon they don't care?
I wonder how that ever came about, him not using the ball. Because often TaylorMade are quite strict in what clubs you use, and every, you know, they want you using the hole through the bag. Two changes this week, I know. Not two changes. Obviously, Scotty doesn't use the golf ball. He uses the Titleist Pro V1. And Rory has now taken out his wedges and put Vokies in as well.
Does that again?
Yeah, this week.
You know what? I'm probably a bit negative in saying this, maybe a bit half glass full. But for me personally, maybe I'm looking for this. But rather than looking at that TaylorMade story and thinking, flipping heck, I want to go and try a TaylorMade driver now because Scotty Scheffler's using one, I almost think, like that, I wonder why he's not using the ball. Like, is the ball not very good?
But then Nelly's using the ball.
Well, exactly.
And for the majority,
most of them do.
Majority of people listening to this podcast, you know, they're not going to hit it. They're not going to hit it like Nelly, not even close. But the closer, in the grand scheme of things, to Nelly,
well,
they are Scotty
Scheffler
speed. But unbelievable. It is great to see. I'm more excited this year than I ever have done. I think the thing that it's potentially taken a bit of the highlight off, there's not been Liv is this week, mm-hmm. Adelaide. It feels like there's so much talk about Nelly and Scotty at the moment. Doesn't seem like they might make more noise about it this weekend. Doesn't seem like there's loads of Liv talk this week, really.
No, you know what, though? And I don't think we touched on this too much, but obviously with the off the back of the Masters, it kind of, I was keeping an eye on that Liv field and how they get on, because if I do tune into Liv, which I've started to do a little bit more, you know, it's on YouTube, kind of keep my eye on it. I want to know that what I'm watching has guys that are truly competitive, so that it means something. Because if they're not competitive and they're not anywhere near as good as the guys in the PGA Tour, it feels like you're watching like a subdivision. And obviously, the Liv guys, certainly Smith and DeChambeau and Hatton, did pretty well.
And Patrick Reed, I believe,
Patrick
as well.
Reed. But certainly DeChambeau. I know he kind of slipped away a bit towards the end of the week, but he was leading off the first day. It was 65 yard. That kind of made me realize. Sorry, it sounds like I'm trumping, but it's actually my chair, Matt, if you can hear it on the thingy. That performance from him, and it kind of gave me that almost like yardstick, that measuring stick that, right, okay, I know now off the back of the Masters that Bryson, his game is trending, he's playing good golf. So if he then wins this live event or is up there, let's say Bryson comes second and plays nicely, and then Sergio, for example, wins it, it kind of almost somewhat validates that event for me a little bit, the fact that, right, okay, well, Bryson's, he is top of his game. Whereas if Bryson had done horrendous in the Masters and then came second in live, I don't kind of know where he sits. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. More live players made the cut than missed the cut at the Masters. But yeah, it showed that there is still competition there. Like I say, seeing it four times a year is probably when we're going to get that real yardstick, as you mentioned.
And I think what's interesting as well is obviously the PGA Tour want to make their product as good as possible. Liv want to make their product as good as possible and want to make it entertaining week in, week out. And as fans, we want to watch entertaining golf week in, week out. But I suppose the bigger question for both the PGA Tour and Liv is that we've almost just said 5 minutes ago that we measure success off major championships, which I think most people do to a degree, really. So it is, again, the yardstick. Well, what does it mean to win PGA Tour events or live events for your career? Does it actually matter? Or really, are they just kind of keeping you fresh and getting you a little money in the bank? Were those four events a year what counts? Don't know.
Quite possibly.
I don't know. Not sure. It seems like the majors, more than ever now, with these kind of two tours, are really what people are getting excited for. So, who knows?
They are, but then, did you even see the somewhat scary fact that the viewing figures of the Masters was down,
yeah,
like quite considerably as well, which kind of, I don't know, is that people maybe tuning out a little bit?
Well, we said, didn't we, was it because of the fact that Scotty was running away with it? If you had Scotty and you had Rory going neck and neck, I don't know.
I think the other thing as well, I'm not sure if that's, how much is that measuring from the app as well?
Because
I think a lot of people do tune in through the app without question.
A lot of people watched it illegally. Does that count?
Oof. In what way, Guy?
Well, if you're in America but you don't use cable and you watched it via a little Amazon stick, oof, a little sticky.
Maybe.
Who knows? Anyway, how long has that been, Max? I might just jump into a little Clubhouse spesh. Yeah, let's do that. Let's log off. Why don't you leave it with a cliffhanger, Rick? Last week we did that and you told your little Tommy Fleetwood story, your drunken escapade. Why don't we, this is out on a Tuesday, why don't we give people something to excite them ready for Friday that you will spill in the Friday episode?
I'll tell you the truth between mine and Pete's golf bit of match.
Oh, yeah. The bit of beef that you had.
Tune into Friday's episode.
I can't believe he squared up to you. That's what I can't believe.
I know.
And you give it a little kidney dig.
More fool him. Right, guys, thanks for listening to the episode. Tune in to Friday for the podcast episode, for the Clubhouse episode, sorry. Loads of great videos coming out this week as well on not only podcast, hit, main channel, content absolutely everywhere. Again, please, if you can donate to charity, it'd be really appreciated. Link in the top line description. Let's see if we can raise as much money as possible. This medal, I worked bloody hard for it. If we can raise some money, that'd be really appreciated. And we shall see you on Friday's episode of the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.